Thanks everyone very much for joining us for the second morning keynote. I'm Jim Covello from Goldman Sachs, and it's my absolute pleasure to welcome Gary Dickerson, Applied Materials President and CEO, and Bob Halliday, Applied Materials CFO. Guys, thanks so much for joining us this morning. I really do appreciate it. I know you guys kind of had moved the earnings call up a little bit, so you could do that yesterday, and then you drove up last night and doing this today for us, so we really do appreciate it. I'd love to start off kind of high level from a technology industry perspective. We have a mix of investors in the room, some very familiar with semiconductors, others more just generally focused on technology, given the nature of the Technology Internet Conference. Gary, you have a lot of experience in this industry with a lot of different technology transitions that Applied Materials and companies you've worked at previously have supported from a semiconductor perspective. I'd love your perspective on kind of where we are from a technology transition perspective right now, and then ultimately working that down to how Applied Materials plays into that.
Sure. So I've been in the industry for a little over 30 years, so I've certainly seen a lot of different technology transitions. What's really driving the industry right now is mobility. And if you look at our different customers in the foundry space, that's the largest area of CapEx spending today. It's really a drive for more performance, more features with lower power and longer battery life. And in 2014, the focus really will be ramping 20 nanometer gate last technology. That's the majority of the CapEx spending. But there really is a huge inflection around FinFET technology also that will be happening. This year, about 25% or so of the CapEx we think is going to be around FinFET, ramping technology buys as all of the different foundry customers are really racing to be the first company with good performance and the right cost on that technology. And it's really the biggest change in the last 30 years around the transistor. And for Applied Materials in that particular market, our really core competency is around materials engineering. Precision films, material modification, interface engineering, and material removal. And so when this transition is happening, the technology that is the most critical is the transistor. And that's where we have tremendous strength in all of those different key technologies. We had last quarter record epi business, record PVD, second highest quarter ever in implant. And all of those technologies are critical to the next generation transistors. So for us, as materials innovation really is driving the performance gains, that is really the sweet spot for Applied Materials. The Arm CEO actually was in a conference and he talked about 90% of the performance gains at 28 nanometer are driven by materials innovation and new device architecture, 90%, 10% by litho scaling. And so these materials transitions are the sweet spot for Applied. If you look at the memory business, customers are going from planar NAND technology to 3D NAND technology. And if you look at what the CapEx profile is there, litho goes down significantly in that transition from planar to 3D NAND. And new materials, deposition, etch, thermal processes, is going up significantly. So this is really a major challenge facing the industry, a major change in terms of the semiconductor technology, where the importance of materials innovation, driving performance gains and driving cost, is the big challenge for the industry. And what we see certainly right now, that is a big driver for our business in memory and in foundry and in logic. But we really see, as you go forward in time, that this is going to continue to increase in terms of importance in driving the semiconductor business. And for us, That is what we do better than anyone in the world, precision materials engineering, and that's really driving our business.
For folks that don't know your background, Gary, you were one of the really drivers of creating KLA-Tencor. You left KLA to become the CEO of Varian Semiconductor. That's when you hooked up with Bob. You guys got together and tripled Varian's market share, and then you wound up selling Varian to Applied Materials, and then, you know, came into Applied Materials that way, and now you're running Applied Materials. Can you talk about the changes you're making at Applied to position Applied from an organizational structure and business change structure, not just, you know, from a materials engineering perspective? And then, you know, what it means to change the ethos and dynamic.
Sure.
Of a big technology company.
Yeah. So my, as you said, you know, I was at KLA from $50 million to $2 billion, and then at Varian, we also had success in driving share and market cap up by a factor of five in 7 years. You know, really, what I believe is that you, by solving high-value problems faster and better than your competitors, that's how you drive the growth of a company. And so what, and looking at Applied, for me, this is so much fun because I look at the key challenge for the industry on how do we continue Moore's Law? How do we keep driving performance gains at the right cost? It's really around this concept of materials engineering, which we do better than anybody in the world. I really believe that. I think we're, if we didn't talk about display, but the same thing is happening there. You know, as you're going to higher resolution displays, the technology is changing, and that is also very good for Applied. We talked about our display orders, the potential to have $500 million over the next two quarters. It's exactly the same theme around the new materials that are enabling the new display technologies that are on our mobile devices and the large TVs. So within Applied, really, what we've been doing is number one, really focus on the strategy. The number one, number two, number three goal for us is gaining share in wafer fab equipment. And focusing on these key technology inflections for our customers, the high-value problems, and then aligning the whole company around that. So in the last 18 months, we've shifted money from headquarters functions and some of the lower-performing non-semiconductor businesses into the great new products that will enable these key challenges for the semiconductor and display customers. In the semiconductor business, we've shifted over $200 million into R&D and into field technical support. We want the best technical people on the ground in every segment working with our customers. And so both in the field working with customers and also back in the factory, we've shifted a massive amount of money in alignment with our strategy. Another thing is really speed. Speed in the velocity in developing our products and bringing those to our customers around these key technology inflections. So 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, relative to product development. We are ramping the CapEx spending also last year and into this year over $150 million. So when we're developing these key technologies, we want to be developing those technologies as fast as possible. And you look at some of the disruptive technologies or the key challenges for our industry. One example we gave at our investor meeting on July 8th was the selective material removal. So as you go to these structures where you have tighter geometries and you're going taller, there are more and more yield challenges. So what we had talked about was that this area of selective material removal is a billion-dollar market opportunity. We have some very good technology there. We've ramped up the number of chambers in development by a huge amount. So we're developing these applications in parallel versus serial. We're driving our prototype part velocity four times faster. so that we can shorten our development times. All of these things we're driving through the company in alignment to solving the key technology challenges, the high-value problems for our customers. And then we're aligning the incentive structure from top to bottom around the things that we need to do to bring those products to market and drive shareholder value.
You talked about the solving high-value problems. And on some level, some people may hear that and say, "Well, that seems kind of obvious. You know, go solve a high-value problem for customers." That hasn't always been the norm, maybe either at Applied Materials or in the semi equipment or semi industry. Sometimes it's, "I build this great tool, and look, customer Intel or Samsung or TSMC, look how great this thing." Can you talk about the difference between doing that, which maybe Applied or some other companies have done over time, versus what you're doing and how you do it?
Yeah. So this is also what I talked about around the technical people in the field. You have you always want to skate where the puck's going to go, and trying to understand what are those key challenges for our customers. We talked about in the foundry business on the gate-last technology or FinFET technology, or the transition from planar to 3D NAND or MRAM technology in the future. These are big, tough inflections for our customers. So understanding, again, the relationships with those key technical buyers, trying to understand where are those challenges, and also trying to understand when we're developing a technology, we create scorecards. And we look at the current technology node, but we look off into the future, and we try to understand from the customer perspective what moves the needle for them and what is the value for them, and then how are we linking our R&D dollars, our technology development, to that customer scorecard, to things that they care about, so that we know that we're developing value. I mean, there's some cases, you know, my career, I've done maybe 50 different products. I've done many products, and sometimes you have engineers developing subsystems that are cool technology, but, you know, they aren't really creating value for the customer. So for us, it's really trying to understand what is going to create either device performance and yield benefits for our customers or cost benefits for our customers, and we're very, very disciplined in looking at that.
Yeah. One thing I want to spend a little time on, and again, I want to remind everybody that we're currently not rated on Applied Materials on the stock. So, you know, we have to restrict this to what you guys have already talked about publicly, which is what you would do anyway. But you guys announced a very significant merger with Tokyo Electron. That's in the approval process as we stand. I'd like to kind of come at it from two levels. First, what's the mindset of a big global company like Applied Materials thinking about a cross-border transaction in technology? We haven't seen a lot of those. There's a lot of skepticism, you know, not just about, you know, Applied Materials and Tokyo Electron, but any cross-border merger in tech or, frankly, in any industry. So can you talk about the mindset that you approached a cross-border transaction with then, and then, you know, letting people know what you can, you know, as per what you said last night about, you know, the status of the Tokyo Electron deal?
Sure. So the first thing is really looking at the strategy. Does it make sense? And, you know, we look at the Tokyo Electron and Applied Materials, very complementary set of products. But both companies really have tremendous value for customers. And putting that together, we believe that we can accelerate as I said before, the key challenge for the industry is how do we keep driving Moore's Law? How do we enable materials innovation for these future device transitions? That is the big challenge for the industry. So we look at the combination with Tokyo Electron, and from a strategy standpoint, we can see how this will enable us to bring better products to market faster and at lower cost. So that is the most important thing. Then, you know, I think, as you know, these combinations are also about people. And I've known Terry Higashi and Tom Tanishi and the Tokyo Electron management for 25 years. I worked with them when they were representing KLA-Tencor for about 10 years early in my career. And so we developed a really strong working relationship, and we really worked together where Japan actually was the best customer for the wafer inspection products. When we were moving from the microscopes to inline inspection, which is standard today, but we had a lot of success working together. That trust and relationship is really a big deal in the success of any merger. The alignment around the strategy for the companies is also very good. Really the way we see the market, we've made a tremendous amount of progress and really beyond Tom and Terry, tremendous enthusiasm, tremendous engagement, really across the company. I think that all of the employees are very excited about the potential that we have in this combination with Tokyo Electron. We focused on the structure of the company, and the concept here is really on simple and a high degree of accountability, not boiling the ocean. There are some products that we have in the U.S. where Applied is very strong, like Epi and PVD and implant, and there's products where Tokyo Electron is very strong in track and wet clean and batch furnaces. Those products will continue to run pretty much the way they run today. Then in the middle, what we talked about relating to the key synergies, there are a few things that move the needle, and we really want to focus on those things that move the needle in the combination, and those areas will report directly to me. We're not boiling the ocean. The concept is simple, high degree of accountability relative to the structure. Then also, we're very much focused on the operating rhythm. How do we run the company on day one? How do we drive strategic planning? How do we drive our financial planning? How do we make sure that the strategies that we're driving for the combined company are on track? All of those things, we're totally aligned that we will drive them on day one so that we hit the ground running.
Do you think we'll see going forward, whether it's in the semiconductor industry or semi equipment industry or the broader tech landscape, do you think we'll see more cross-border M&A transactions because of the dynamics happening in tech over the next 5 years than we have over the last 15?
I think, again, it comes back to strategy. Does the strategy make sense? Can the teams work well together? Can you execute the strategy? That's the other thing that is really important. I think personally for us, those are the things that we look at, and we have a high degree of confidence. I don't know, Bob, on the...
Yeah, I'll answer. So they joke with me in the company, I put everything into a three-legged stool, right?
This one's four legs.
So the three-legged stool for us on this merger was, are they attractive markets? Do the companies have very attractive products? And three, the specifics of the companies and how well we work together. We looked at the markets that we're both in as more attractive than people may realize in terms of we think semi-caps and display are generally attractive markets. We think the service business aspect of it is under-realized. And we think that if you look within those markets, highly capable, very strong, large suppliers are doing better, frankly, because the ramps, production ramps, are three times as steep as they used to be. The technology changes of FinFETs and V-NANDs are much tougher. So very highly capable suppliers like Tokyo Electron Applied tend to do well. The second thing is products. So the product's strong. So if you look at the products of Tokyo Electron and Applied Materials, we have very strong products in certain vertical tool markets like track, furnaces, dielectric etch for Tokyo Electron. As Gary mentioned, we're very strong in places like Epi. So the products, and implant, many products, PVD. So if you look at the products as strong, then you look at the specifics of the companies, which is sort of what we were talking about. A lot of, you got to trust one another to make this work. And Gary's known the Tokyo Electron guys and Mike for 25 years. And especially in Asia, whether it's with customers or partners, trust, personal relationships almost trump contractual relationships. So there's a deep degree of trust, and it's growing every day between the teams. The other one I'd say that people lose sight of sometimes, if we announced to you that we were going to do a big U.S. technology merger, you might say, gee, there's a couple of questions. One, do all the technologists walk out the door the first day? Well, that doesn't happen. The leadership of Tokyo Electron is a very strong leadership. The teams are very committed to the company. So the risk is actually, in many respects, less merger with a company like Tokyo Electron, because the technology is strong and the people are dedicated to the company. So I think then you say, how do you make it work? It's personal relationships, trust, keeping the technologists in the company, and the structural platform we've come up with to merge the companies and leverage the cash flow to investors is very powerful. Will that transform to other technology companies? I think they would do the same thing. Gary calls it the strategy. You look at the markets, are they attractive? Strong products, and can the teams work together? I think we checked all those boxes in our case. I think many other companies might, because we really are global companies. I mean, 80% of our sales are export sales. Gary spends half his time in Asia as it is. Right? So I think as technology goes more and more globalization, these types of things probably will become more likely. But the key is, can the teams work together? You have strong markets, strong products.
Yeah. So Gary said he's having a lot of fun. I know sometimes that fun translates into calls very late at night to you. I mean, you know, maybe you guys can talk a little bit about your, you know, working relationship and how it evolved over time at Varian and how it's translated over to Applied Materials. You know, part of it is just an amusing tale for me, but I think part of it is what makes you guys so successful as a team.
Well, my call plan says I love working with Gary. Well, let's be honest. I'll start and Gary can finish my thoughts. I was joking with him. Our script sounds well aligned as we go through the conference call. And I said, you're even starting to get a Boston accent. But, I mean, you know, let's face it. We both made a few bucks the last 15 years. So we do this for the fun of it. This is intellectually challenging. We enjoy our work. You know, we're working 70, 80 hours a week because we enjoy it, right? The intellectual challenge. And what motivates companies and people, everybody in this room, you want to win. People want to win. That's the challenge. We're not playing football or basketball, but we want to win. And for us, just like a baseball player, the scorecards, are we moving the stock? Because that's the simple version of what we're winning. And if you see winning in our industry, in any industry, you got to grow. You can't save yourself in the prosperity. So what's energizing for our companies and us and our teams is grow. So Gary is really creates a great vision of how, and he sees how to grow a company. And, you know, I help him on the resource allocation. So we are the epitome of product-driven companies, right? Our customers are really smart, best product wins. You know, if we can help them do FinFETs and VNAND, that's good. So the three-legged stool on best product wins is, do you see the roadmap, and Gary sees it better than anyone in the industry? Two, do you bet on the right products and drive it, great teams to build it, and Gary does that. And three is resource allocation. Get the money, put enough bets on the products that are going to be winners. You know, I help out on that.
Yeah.
So it's been great.
Yeah, one of the things I really like about working with Bob is that we really focus on value creation. You know, what are the key, it all starts, again, that we talked about, solving high-value problems for customers, faster and better than anyone else. And so we really start everything with strategy. What is our strategy? And then everything flows from that. And so, you know, in some cases, you know, people will manage from quarter to quarter. And you know, the thing I like about Bob is that we're very much aligned from a strategic perspective. And this, again, the passion, the love of really solving high-value problems for companies. I think one of the things that is the most limiting for many companies is how you define yourself. If you define yourself in a very narrow way, you're going to ride whatever cycle is happening within that industry. But, you know, to me, it's also like what we did at Varian. We not only did we gain share, but we moved from electrical modification of silicon to physical modification. And if you look at the leading foundry and logic customers today, if you go back to 2004, very little of the business was physical material modification. Today, 50% or more of the applications are in that space. So really trying to think about what are the core competencies and then how do you apply that in areas where are huge opportunities for growth. And that's why I love the whole strategy around materials engineering, because I really believe that that is the big challenge that's facing this industry. And so then with Bob, the thing that works so great is that that alignment on the strategy and the consistency of how we drive the company is just fantastic. And then the other thing is just the passion. You know, I tell people many times in manager meetings, if you don't love what you're doing, you should go do something else because life is just too short. So Bob knows that he gets phone calls from me many times.
Bob told me about how passionate the 10 o'clock at night
calls
are.
10 o'clock,
that's the start. Yeah, that's the start.
Oh,
yeah.
Gary's sneaky, let's be honest. In Boston, I'll be doing emails at home until 11:30, and then he sees the emails slowing down, so I start getting the phone calls at 11:30 at midnight. He's tracking me.
But I think that's it. I mean, it's really, passion and love for what we're doing, and then just the alignment around how to drive the company.
Yep.
You know, one of the things we do this quarterly resource allocation meeting. I'm not a big believer in annual budgets because the market, the competitive situations, they're changing too fast.
Yep.
So we get the team together, we all are in the room, and how we're going to allocate our money to drive shareholder value. At Varian, we would think about, you know, are we going to replace the conference room chairs even though they're falling over because, you know, again, is that going to drive shareholder value? So that kind of alignment and the way we think is it really helps in driving the vision.
It's great. Bob, you talked about winning, and, you know, winning in your book is watching the stock price go up. You know, unless we mucked it up here on stage, today you're winning with the stock reacting really nicely to the earnings report. Maybe you could just give kind of people, you know, who might have not had a chance to who may have been here and, you know, not have had a chance to dig into the report, a little bit of a high-level view on the earnings call last night and you know, kind of where we stand and why you think the stock's reacting well to that today.
Sure. Conceptually, we look at quarterly earnings calls as reporting how we did, but also a constant check on, and for you folks, how are we doing against the strategy we've enunciated to you. So last night, we reported that with a rearview mirror, you know, we beat expectations on revenue and EPS. That's great. And we guided forward pretty well. But we felt, more importantly, that it was a good validation of our strategy, right? If you look at it, we had record quarter in orders from Taiwan. We had record quarter. Last year, we had a record year in inspection. We had a record quarter, second highest ever on implant, highest ever on epi. Gained share in etch last year, gained share in inspection. So validation of where we're going to drive growth of the company. And that, if you look at, if we could drive growth in revenues, about 50% of our incremental sales and equipment dropped to the operating profit line and probably 40% in services. So growing that revenue line is really high value. So one, we think that the quarter validated our strategy and was an indicator of where we're going in this trip. The second thing was people were concerned that, hey, is the merger okay? Is it working? We're confident that, one, that we will get approval. We're also remain confident that the tax benefits, the economics of the merger look good to us. So I think, once again, last night we validated on many fronts that the strategy is working. We're on the path we've outlined to people, and things look like they're on course.
One of the other notable aspects of the report last night is, I think, NAND sales, not just orders, but NAND sales were at 7-year high levels. Gary, you talked a little bit about the 3D NAND and what's driving that, but in reality, that's actually that's more going forward,
yeah.
That technology transition. This is more, you know, what the legacy planar technology that's driving the current pickup. Can you talk about why that's happening and, you know, the opportunity for that? Because that's something that over the last couple of years, memory has really been kind of dormant. You know, I think there's been a lot of concern among the marketplace that maybe we would never see this level of NAND orders again. Here we are. You know, we're kind of just getting started. We have this big technology transition still in front of us, and we're at 7-year highs for NAND.
Yeah, so the bit growth is in the 40 to 50% range, which is driving capacity additions from our customers. As you said, really the majority of our business right now, and actually in 2014, is still from planar NAND, ramping capacity for that technology. 3D NAND is a compelling technology transition. Basically, the customers look at the cost of the 2D scaling is very, very high. This gets back to the whole theme around materials engineering and materials innovation. Now they're going to go vertical.
Yes.
Really, the litho part of that is going down dramatically, and materials innovation, new materials steps are increasing. That is not the majority of our business in 2014, but certainly going forward, that is a huge focus. What we're seeing right now across the board for all of our customers is a focus on accelerating 3D technology. It is a very difficult transition, but it is a compelling transition for our customers. When we look at 2014, we certainly see an acceleration in technology buys. That's part of the $7 billion CapEx that we talked about in NAND this year. Also based on the 40%-50% bit growth in NAND technology, we also see customers ramping planar NAND, and we are also gaining share there.
I have a bunch of other questions that I'd like to ask the guys, but I do want to give the audience the opportunity to ask any questions. There we go. Right there. You got a mic coming your way there.
What you guys are doing in terms of trying to take share versus KLA, is the strategy through a standalone tool or through bundling?
In the inspection and review business, we talked about the highest bright field inspection orders ever last year for us in 2013. I think one thing that people maybe don't understand, the inspection market, there are many different parts of that business. If you look at e-beam review, we are the leader in e-beam review by a large amount, and that business is very strong, and that's across the board, memory, foundry, all of these different customers. We brought a new product out recently, very strong adoption. In this business, what I learned many years ago was you can't fix what you can't see. The imaging capability that we have on our electron beam systems is world-class. It is the best. With the products that we're bringing to market, we're extending that leadership. That's an area that is growing and an area of a lot of strength for us. In the wafer inspection business, we also are growing share. We're growing the layer penetration, especially in logic and foundry. What we said is we grew the inspection business 4%-6% in 2013. Part of the money that we've allocated back into R&D in the field is in this area. The layer qualification for us at the leading nodes is increasing pretty significantly. We have some unique imaging capability with our UVision technology, some parts of the market where we are world-class. Really, it's a layer by layer and a defect type by defect type battle. Right now, we have good momentum in expanding our penetration, especially in logic and foundry.
I have a question on the flat panel market. We spent all of our time talking about the semi equip market, which makes sense because that's the bulk of the business. I think you guys have averaged about $100 million or so in orders over the last two quarters in flat panel. The comment last night on the call was, you expect to maybe average $250 million a quarter in orders over the next couple of quarters. The timing on when you're going to recognize that revenue will get metered out over the course of the year. What's driving the big uptick in flat panel?
You have really two major drivers. One is on TVs. The area growth is really accelerating. This last year, the average TV size went up about one and a half to 2 inches, and that's above the historical norms, and we really see that accelerating when we look at our customers and certainly you look at market demand. That area growth will generate about three Gen 8.5 factories in this next year. The other one is in the mobility space, where there's really a battle for higher resolution for all of those smartphones and tablets, those types of devices. When the customers are driving higher resolution, it's causing transitions in technology. again, very similar to what we talked about in the semiconductor industry. As you move from amorphous silicon to low-temperature polysilicon, metal oxide, or organic LED, that's how our customers are driving higher resolution and lower power and better mobility. And those transitions are very good for us because as they're moving from the current technology, the penetration of our PVD and CVD tools goes up. The number of process steps, the CapEx spending is going up in those new technologies that are being introduced. So that's a really great driver for us.
Probably have time for one more question before we have to break.
I've got one here.
I'm sorry.
Sorry,
okay.
The audience.
Okay, there you go. Oh, yeah.
Can you review the cost synergies from the Tel deal that you've talked about and give color on those, particularly also about the product overlap areas and savings you can get there?
Yeah, so product overlap, I'll cover that, and maybe Bob can do the synergies. There really is very little overlap between the two companies. As I said earlier, if you look at the areas where Applied Materials is today and where we have real strength, at Epi, PVD, implant, you know, those are areas that are really driving our business. If you look at Tokyo Electron, track, wet clean, batch furnaces, very, very little overlap between the two companies.
Sure, and the synergies we announced were $250 million between the combined company exit the first full fiscal year, which is probably fiscal 15. And then we said $500 million for the year of fiscal 17. That's across the whole range of costs. So if you look at the 17 model, we project the company to do $18.2 billion in a $37 billion wafer fab equipment number. So at 25% operating margins, you get about $14 billion worth of cost to get that $500 million out of. So that includes, you know, materials costs, facilities costs, field infrastructure, corporate costs, which are redundant between the two companies. So we're pretty confident we're going to get that. We've had a number of meetings between the two companies. There's alignment around the goal, and we need to achieve the goal. The detailed plans we're not disclosing now, but we feel pretty good about it.
Great. Well, guys, thank you so much for being here. Again, I appreciate the extra effort, you know, moving the earnings call and everything to be here. We really appreciate it. Good luck, and look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.